Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on WMR.fm, episode number 503. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my co-host is my company senior SEO, Scott Vanak. Yay, we're getting going here. We missed one episode last week, but we're getting going.
Well, what do we promise? We promise two a month. Well, we're at least exceeding that. So yes. There we go.
That's true. We didn't say it. Oh no, I think I do say every week on my thing, but yeah, we should change that up because
we're here.
Yeah, I shouldn't say anything. Okay, so let's just jump right into here. SEO news. Yoast SEO WordPress plugin has added support for LLMS.txt. All right, so what is it? This stands for large language models. This text file is designed to work similar to your robots.txt file, but focused on LLMs. It works to enable LLMs to access your content in a way that is easy for them, but it also provides them with the content you want them to see that may differ from humans. Now, I always thought, I might not end that, but what I always thought was it was a way for you to show them content that you just preferred them to see. I didn't know if that it was anything different than human content.
So yeah, I've been trying to learn a little bit more about this, but honestly, I've been spending almost no time on it because it's not really mainstream yet. No. And I looked at some examples. Essentially what it is you, in its most basic level, a link and a description of what content is on that link. And you can exclude, so it basically allows LLMs to see the content you wanted to see throughout that text file without seeing ads and other filler content. And really you could put completely different content in there. And it could theoretically appear in ChatGPT without it ever actually appearing live on your real site. They could pull the content from that LLMS text file. So it's kind of shady. Could be.
Probably well detected before then, but yeah, interesting. So the announcement states that it helps AI tools to understand your site better, guides large language models like ChatGPT and Gemini to your most relevant content, highlights your key content automatically. There's no need to decide what to include. Yoast SEO detects your most important and recently updated pages. No technical setup is required. The file is generated and refreshed weekly. No coding or manual work needed. They suggest this future-proofs your website for AI search, making sure your site is ready for how people find information today and tomorrow. Built into Yoast SEO, it's free for everyone and available in one click without any upgrade needed. What did John Mueller say about this?
John is not a fan of LLMS.txt. He had said recently, as far as I know, none of the AI services have said they're using LLMS.txt, and you can tell when you look at your server logs that they don't even check for it. To me, it's comparable to the keyword meta tag. This is what a site owner claims the site is about. Is the site really like that? Well, you can check it, but at that point, why not just check the site directly, is what he says. So, you know, I don't know. Is it going to take off? Maybe. the way I look at it, if it's integrated into Yoast, you really have nothing to lose. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it in Yoast yet. I wonder if it's actually live. I'll have to take a closer look. If you have to enable it, why not enable it and let it do its thing? I don't see any harm in it, but I also wouldn't enable it and then expect magic to happen. You know, but maybe down the road, as some of the bigger LLMs start to use it, if they do adopt it, you'll be already ready to go. You won't even have to think about it.
The only hint in all that is that it's available in one click. So maybe it's not enabled by default.
Yes.
I don't think it's a bad idea if it was even, but I'm glad that they just made it optional. Yeah. If it's automatically including your best, quote unquote, best content and most updated content, then it's something. I don't know. Way it stands, it's certainly not much. But if they want to look cutting edge, I guess this is one way to go. I can see why John's not too excited about it. It's going to be more of interest to anyone who's trying to block LLMs from particular areas of their site. And that's only going to work if it's highly adopted. And gosh, who knows where that's going to go? I have no idea.
I think it's pretty smart though for Yoast to implement this now, because I mean, I'm sure there are some other plugins out there already, but that space is going to be really small right now. And, you know, it might just help with their, you know, attracting people that don't already use Yoast or keeping people using Yoast that might switch elsewhere. So it makes sense for them to do it now, but I don't think it really is a big deal yet. Anyways, that's for sure.
It's probably just me, but I always find it, well, I'm finding it really weird saying Yoast when I know that Yoastavox is not even involved anymore.
Right. I kind of forgot about that.
There must be examples of companies like that. Like here we have a big company called the Patterson Group, which practically owns everything in Canada. It seems a lot of dust owns a lot of stuff, but he's still alive and he still owns it, I think, or still major shareholder. So it would be weird though, if he passed, fine. You know, makes sense to keep it going. But if he's actually moved off and did another business and didn't even own it anymore, it'd be kind of weird having your own name running it. It's got to be a bit bizarre for Yoast.
I saw an interview not long ago with Jimmy Pattison, and it's totally off topic, but if you're interested in that stuff, really interesting, look it up and find it. Hearing his history is, it was just really interesting. I don't know what else to say about it. Yeah.
Well, some of these guys have pretty incredible histories. All right. So what's next here?
Yeah, so Google has dropped support for some structured markup. They've done this before. They enable support for certain things, and then they take it away. And in the coming months, we can see that some structured data elements will no longer be applied to rich results. These include book actions, course info, claim review, estimated salary, learning video, special announcement, and vehicle listing. So these are pretty specific. Even Ross had said previously to me, he's like, I don't know if any of our clients use any of these. And I was thinking about it, and I don't think any of them do. We have had clients in the past that would have benefited from this, but none of our current clients really need these particular markups. Google says that they're removing them because their analysis shows that they're not commonly used in search. I probably could have told you that without an analysis, just by reading the bullet points. So what do you do if you do use them? Keep using them. Google says this, and it kind of goes without saying, you have no harm by using them. Google will simply just ignore it. And there are other search engines out there. There isn't just Google. So others, Bing may use it. Some of the LLMs may use it or use it eventually. DuckDuckGo, I don't know, who knows? Ask Jeeves. Some others may use it. So and it doesn't hurt. So don't go out and remove it. If you're manually adding it, you may want to stop doing that. It's up to you, of course. But you're not going to get any love from Google for them.
One of the ones I can't expose on very much here, but because I didn't really dig in, but the claim review was interesting. As far as on the cursory review I did of it, it was a markup to claim a particular testimonial that you put on your site saying it's from you, or something along those lines. That was really interesting. But again, because I knew it was being deprecated, I didn't really dig in, but it's amazing just how many, I didn't even know that existed.
I know.
Wow.
Vehicle listing would have been handy a long time. We used to have a car sales client. Mm-hmm. This goes way back. That would have been a good one. we had a client that did job stuff, so estimated salary is probably a good one for him. But yeah,
I think a lot of them had those built into their feeds that went to Google.
Yeah,
probably. Or feeds coming from the vehicle platforms they were using already had vehicle listings, so we didn't have to really embed that in the site.
With the vehicle example, I think that came before structured markup.
Probably.
It might be. Time is going by quick.
Yep. All right. Google AI mode traffic data has finally come to Search Console, but guess what? Only in the United States.
and even more good news about it, you can't really tell which is AI mode content. It's just mixed in with all the regular stuff, and there's no way to extract it and no filters.
Brilliant. How helpful.
at least it's there. So at least instead of like 1,000 visitors, you've got the true 1,500 or whatever. So at least you know that the numbers are there, even though you don't know what they're from. I guess that's better than it just not being there at all. And actually, you know, it probably is, because otherwise you see things trending downward as people transition, but you're still getting those clicks. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it's better Google's than defense. Nothing, but it's not far from nothing.
No, it's close to nothing. It's on the cusp of nothing. Come on, Google. Us non-Americans also want this nothing. Can you release this elsewhere?
Yes, please. And the thing I'm most annoyed about is when we get nothing from AI updates, because again, they're only released in the States. So we have to wait for that. And that limits our ability to test. Again, that's not a big deal. Thank goodness it's not a big deal for us, because we don't have to be cutting edge for small, medium businesses who are our focus. They can, they don't have to be enterprise level, implement next week kind of stuff. So we have a lot of time, but it's still nice. I'd like to have that time to work on it and get a better grasp of it. I guess the one big benefit though from waiting is we don't have to see all the changes as they're messing about with the first beta pretty much that they've released. So hell, it's almost alpha when they put it out there. All right. Well, speaking of Google, we have a whole section this time called Google Bugs, because why not? So what's first here?
So I wasn't going to include any of these, and because the first one I saw was just, it's just short. It's like a short. And then I saw another bug. I'm like, yeah, let's make a little bug section today. It's kind of, I like talking about when Google messes up or doesn't work properly, because they're so big, they should never break, but they break more than anybody, really. So the first one, which would be really annoying, is some Google Knowledge Panel buttons are linking to the wrong place. Where they're finding that some of these blue buttons, which were introduced fairly recently, I want to say a few weeks, but it might be months or it might even be decades ago now, the way time's going by. Some time ago, they introduced these buttons. They show up below the Knowledge Panel and typically link to the website. Well, some of them link to absolutely nothing. There was one example of, I can't remember the domain, but instead of pointing to .com, it pointed to .mx. So that was a 404 error. There was one for John Deere tractors, and their blue Knowledge Panel button linked to some total random nothingness, like HQR4828 dot some extension that doesn't, like, it was just like, I think what it is, well, I think I can confidently say is that AI is doing this, and AI is not very smart. I can't confirm that it's AI doing it, but nothing seems to make sense to me unless there's a hack. And hopefully Google's fixing this. So I don't know, but that's kind of fun.
It is. And Google search is, and we talked about this actually the last episode. I don't know. It's all blur, but Google search had previously visited links. So we saw a thing where it would say this has been previously visited with a little tag that was being added. I believe it was a tag. Anyway, it used to be that it would just be purple or some off color saying you've already been to the page. Well, there's now a bug for some users, not all, but where all links in Google search are being marked as previously visited, meaning that the blue links are all now appearing purple. Google is aware of this weird bug and is working to resolve it. Yeah.
That would be, at first I'm like, who cares? But then one of the comments in the article, it said they're doing a bunch of research and they're visiting lots of stuff right now. And now they don't know where they've been. because everything's purple. They've been everywhere.
Oh,
and
no.
I thought, yeah, I guess that's a real problem. I've never really thought about it because it's just always blue or purple, and you know, but I haven't seen this bug, so that's cool. That's one of the good things about, I guess, not being in the U.S. We don't get the bugs either. They don't release them here. I don't know.
But, well, hopefully they can use their browser history unless they were using incognito to at least figure out where they've been.
Either way, it's fun. I don't know.
Indeed. Okay, well, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back to AI news, and we've got lots to share. Welcome back to SEO 101 on WMR.FM, hosted by myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company senior SEO, Scott Fanak. All right, so Google has launched a Search Live real-time voice search in AI mode. Once again, only for U.S.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Users, so we haven't even been able to test this, but these real-time voice conversations are now live. They offer audio responses and web links. The feature is powered by a custom version of Gemini designed with advanced voice capabilities. The author of the article at Search Engine Journal, Matt Southern, says, quote, "Web links still appear with AI voice responses. Marketers should test it out and consider how their content appears in conversational situations. This matters more as people ask follow-up questions and explore topics through natural dialogue." Unquote. Yeah, I agree. That's the kind of thing that I would love to be testing. Thank you, Google. Can't test that, but we'll be able to see all the results from others who are testing it.
Clearly, voice search and stuff like that is big and growing. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts? Because I know for me personally, I often go towards text instead of video because I don't want to have to watch a video. And the idea of talking to my phone to do stuff, I'd rather be quiet and type it in. Whereas like my wife dictates everything. She's like, "Hey Siri," and then, oh, now my phone's going to pick up. And we'll send all our text messages by voice to text. And I never do that because I just would rather not speak out loud. And in a lot of situations you maybe can't or shouldn't. Are you someone that uses text yet? Or do you think you would?
No. If I look back on what I've been doing most recently, no, because I like to put a lot of thought into how I create my prompt, as I've alluded to. And also I need to really think through what I'm going to ask, because if in AI, voice is very unforgiving if you don't have a very clear picture of what you're saying. That said, I'm probably remiss a bit. Like I know, my friend Chris Ward, she uses ChatGPT voice, and she has long discussions, like long questions full of ums and ahs, and she can even reframe it and all that stuff. And then she just lets the thing figure it out, and then it answers in audio. And it is pretty awe-inspiring. It's pretty cool. I think the analyst in me, though, wants to see the result, wants to dig into it more, create more of a response. Now, if it's coming to search, like just purely I'm in a rush, I sometimes do because I don't want to type it into, you know, slowly and make all the mistakes. I am getting a little annoyed with how fast it takes for me to even with all of the little tricks I have to speed up my typing, it still takes time. And if you're doing something or being distracted, it's easy to make a mistake. Whereas with voice, not so much if it's a simple query. So I'm probably using it more for simple queries than I did or did before.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah. I was curious how much the voice world will really take off, because I think there are a lot of people like me, at least, who would rather not talk, would rather just text. And those people aren't going to change, or maybe they will. I don't know. Maybe I will.
I see my kids doing voice more.
Yeah.
Yours?
Not really. Not at all.
Hmm.
No.
Are they allowed to have phones? Do they have phones?
Yep. Yeah. Emma's got a, they've have their phones, and they probably just don't want mom and dad to hear what they're saying into their phone. it's gotta be what it is. Like, oh, mom, dad can't know I'm searching for that. And so he'll type it in. I don't know. But Lindsay uses it all the time. So who knows? Maybe we all will someday.
I think it's inevitable that we will, but obviously not all questions. And we won't go down there. It's too many funny things we could say now. Okay. So, I wanted to add a little note for myself, kind of a good segue actually, because I've been doing a ton of research on AI prompts and playing around with improving our AI prompts. Because, you know, I've got systems and processes in place, or as Chris Ward calls, super toolkits, which are for my staff to follow when let's say we're redrafting some content or creating content for a press release or whatever it might be. And I've already created these prompts and I've made it really simple for them to go and use and copy and paste and et cetera, et cetera. But then, you know, it's been time flies. It's probably been a year since I created those. Well, things have improved a lot in a year. So I'm going through them. And although the results are still good, it's nothing like they're broken or anything, there's ways to improve them. And while I've been doing this, I've been actually using Claude, which is my favorite from Anthropic, Opus 4, which is their most advanced and most expensive consumer available AI that I'm aware of. It isn't cheap, but it's just phenomenal to create and improve my prompts. So I'm putting in prompts and saying, look, I want this to be better. How can I do that? And then it gives me a result. And what I was getting, I just get these tangents while I'm working. And I think, what is it about these prompts that I always feel like I need to verify with you? I'm like literally talking to the AI. And is there a way to make a perfect prompt where I don't need to do that? I really wanted to see what it said. So really the questions are, what if the prompt you used didn't really get everything you needed? Or just how much effort is too much for a prompt? Is a perfect prompt possible to avoid verification? This is what it said. Even the most detailed prompt can be interpreted differently by AI. Verification isn't a weakness. It's professional diligence. Think of it like proofreading important work. You're not doing it because you failed the first time, but because catching subtle misalignments early saves significant time later. Your collaborative approach of crafting, verifying, and refining is exactly how professionals should work with AI tools currently. It's not about perfect prompts. It's about effective iteration. So that's what AI said. That was just actually kind of a finale of this long explanation of how it thinks, which was really flipping cool. I totally nerded out. So what does this come to? Why am I bringing this up? I suggest everyone ask if they can think of any way to improve what they just wrote for you. If you're not already doing that, verify. See how it handles it. So far, I'm gobsmacked. I always have been. I've been doing this for a long time because I never trust what I'm provided. Sometimes even say, are you hallucinating or whatever? But I'm just speaking of this one instance where I just ask it to verify and see if it can improve what it just wrote. And 90% of the time it can, and it's a pretty awesome result. So don't just go with the final result you get. Okay. And do consider too that there's different ways of verifying. You know, they always say that you need to verify what an AI says, but that doesn't just mean verifying the source material and any truths. You also want to do it based on the content. Like, can it improve it? Verify it. And it's substantial just how much has changed and for the better. So, little hard-earned experience there to pass along to you. If anyone else is nerding out in AI, you should jump into our Facebook page and chat with me about it. It's always fun.
I want to know why AI is sucking up to you, because it said that your approach is exactly how professionals should do it. Like, what did you bribe the AI? Did you bribe Claude to say that?
Yeah.
I think it's got a crush on you, Ross.
Yeah, it's one of the things that they're saying right now is that one of the actual problems is AI's far too positive and supportive, to the point of it just being a bit ridiculous. And it's true. Now in this case, I was justified, but
it kind of comes back. I don't want to rehash old jokes from AI, but it does kind of rehash that you really do have to be careful how you word questions to AI, because it will give you the answer sometimes just to make you happy. Like, why should I scribble all over my face with this pen? And it will say, oh, you should do that. That would be great. You know, it won't just say, well, you shouldn't do that because you'll get poisoned. I don't know. You know, like, it doesn't give you both sides necessarily. It gives you the argument to support what you're saying.
I literally say, please provide, sometimes I say honest response and I chuckle. I'm like, why did I say honest?
Yeah.
It's not going to be honest, but I say, you know, provide a response that's neutral. You know, don't color this with your concern for my feelings. Just tell me what you believe based on what I just said. And it does make a difference. You will see a different response depending on the quality of the AI you're using. I can't stress that enough. The different models out there, they can differ a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're really concerned about something and you really want to get a genuinely good answer, invest the money in one of the higher end prompts. It's not much money. I mean, one of the biggest prompts I did just yesterday, I think took 38 cents. I mean, that's a lot for AI. It must've been a ton of work it did, but still it's not really anything. And it comes down to our overall bills for a business.
Yeah, very true.
All right. What's next here?
Yeah. ChatGPT is getting smarter. So these are just a few updates at ChatGPT that rolled out on June 13th that are kind of worth sharing here. So now ChatGPT will be more reliable at following instructions, especially across extended chats. It will now be less prone to repeating itself. That happens so often for me. I'll ask it to do something. It does it wrong. And I'll say, no, you did it wrong. It needs to be this way. Now do it again. And it does the exact same thing.
That's cool. That comes down to AI model quality, I find.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. It can also automatically do multiple searches behind the scenes to answer complex questions. And it can now search based on users uploading an image, which is kind of cool. That's new. And that could be like, I've had things where like I had like a, I can't remember what it was, something I found in my shop. It was like a thing. I don't know what it was. And I couldn't figure out what it is. But now even Google image search couldn't find other versions. But maybe AI could help me figure out what these things are. Some weird tool for my dad's toolbox. Anyways, OpenAI notes that often responses can be much longer than necessary, especially for quick, simple answers. And they're working to fix that. Thank you. I've had times where I want a basic piece of code. Like, give me an empty shell for an FAQ page markup. That's all I want. And it'll give me a full HTML page with title tags. And it'll craft content for it. It's like, I don't want any of that. And that happens all the time. Like, it's so often. My stuff is in there, but it gives you more, right? And they have warned also that the model does still make mistakes and encourages users to verify results. And we know that, but it's nice to hear OpenAI actually say that as well. So, you know, they acknowledge that it's not perfect, which clearly is true, but...
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so another bit here. Here are some things, and this is important. Well, I shouldn't say this is definitely important for SEO, because that's debatable, but it is important if you're concerned about showing whether or not you're using AI or not. So these are things to check out when you're pasting any content from AI. There is a footprint. In general, most cases, it leaves identical footprints in the HTML code. You want to look for, oh gosh, how do I do this on a podcast. But anyway, a paragraph HTML start. So, and then it says data dash start and then data dash end. You might even see AI dash optimize as part of the code. So search engines like Google and Bing can detect this code indicating AI generated content. Not just EM dashes, the identifiable markers are now in the raw HTML code, not just stylistic elements. If you want to find and see whether or not this is an issue on your site or competitors, use Screaming Frog SEO Spider, search for data dash start and data dash end in the HTML. To clean this up, just edit each affected page to delete that code and replace it with cleaner HTML. Now, what's the debate here that I was saying? It's not the end of the world that you're using AI. It's the quality that comes out. Now, I believe it was Bill Hartzer who responded to someone who said yes, pretty much what I just said. And he said, they don't care about it now. But what if they care about it later and you just left these footprints? That's valid. It's not something you can't fix later, but just the same, why not get to it now before you paste this content into your site and hopefully protect yourself a bit better in the future?
That's fair.
Okay. What do you think there, Scott? Anything else to add?
No. Okay. I don't.
All right. Well, now we have a question, and this is from an anonymous member on our Facebook SEO 101 podcast page. This is our group, I should say. He says, I'm not sure quite how to phrase this, but I've been researching small niches lately. Beta fish, for example. What I've noted is that there are not many websites dedicated solely to beta fish. Most of the content comes from larger sites that only have a few articles on the topic, and some only have 2 out of 5. So my question is, would it be better to create a blog about tropical fish in general with 10 to 20 articles on each species, or to build a site focused entirely on one fish, like betas, and cover every possible aspect with 400 to 500 articles? I kind of always thought one website dedicated to one topic would always do better than one that just touches on everything in that topic, but maybe I'm wrong. All right. I've got my ideas here, but what do you go first here, Scott?
This is one of those questions that I feel is really hard to answer because it falls under the it depends umbrella. Mm-hmm. We don't know really what their goals are. Are they setting up a business to sell these fish? Are they, a fish consult? I don't know. I don't know what his role is or why he wants this content. If his focus is beta fish and that's it, well, yeah, don't create a tropical fish site, just create a site about beta fish and have your 400 to 500 articles. We were joking before, like, I don't know, is there that much content on the top? Like, I don't know. I'm not an expert. Maybe there is. Just make sure that all those 400 to 500 articles, are justifiable. They have a purpose to exist, and it's not just rehashing the same things over and over and over again, which 500 articles, I feel like on any topic, it would be hard to write 500 unique articles that are independent, but maybe. Right. If your goal is to create a website that's about tropical fish in general, yeah, have a tropical fish and beta could be a section of that site with, you could still have your 400 to 500 articles if you want, but whatever it may be. Right. So
there are 76 recognized species of beta fish. So there you go.
Really?
Pretty easy to do 500, I suppose.
I thought there was one.
Me too. I thought to check and I'm like, oh, wow. Okay.
My dad was a big aquarium guy and, he'd probably be embarrassed that I didn't know this. So,
and anonymous member must be getting a chuckle here because he's just using this as an example. Maybe it has nothing to do with that. But sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Anything you want to finish there?
I would just say basically do what feels right to you. Just make sure everything you put out there is quality and there's enough of it. If you only got one article on beta fish, well, obviously you need I don't know. I kind of said all that. I don't have a hard, firm answer either way.
Yeah. And be totally leery of running it all with AI. If you really want this to succeed with a good degree of success, you're going to want to be close to an expert in the field you're writing about. that way you can provide true, valuable, unique content. And that's not, you know, that's what Google's looking for. That's what all search engines and all AI is going to be looking for. And then follow the models that are out there, you know, starting off with a TLDR, too long, didn't read at the beginning, just sort of a very succinct explanation of what the article's about, answering the question that someone might be using to get to that page, and then get in the detail on the page. Add multimedia. If you really want it to succeed, I'm going to keep harping on this every episode, probably, do YouTube. Do video of this stuff. And then you can use video to blog or some tools like that to immediately create it into something very useful, complete with images, complete with the embedded video, etc. Lots to do, and ensuring that it's universal, kind of like universal search. It's got all these different multimedia is such a perfect word, isn't it? It's got all the multimedia in the page. It's just the way it's going to work. And I think it's the way you're going to have legs into the future with this site. If you've got better fish without legs. But anyway.
And if they have legs, well, that's a whole other thing. You're going viral, my friend.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Yeah, if you somehow spliced that, I want to see it.
Yeah.
Maybe not how you did it. That would creep you. But anyway. Well, on behalf of myself, on that note, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Vanak, thank you for joining us today. Remember, we have a show notes newsletter you can sign up for at SEO101radio.com. If you have any questions you would like to share with us, please feel free to post them on our Facebook group, easily found by searching SEO 101 Podcast on Facebook. Have a great week, and remember to tune into future episodes, which air every 2 weeks, sometimes every week, on WMR.fm.
Awesome. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.